Some will say it's foolish, some that it's absurd, but still we choose to live our lives upon God's holy word.
We know it's always perfect, we trust it in all things.
It's holy and it's right,
so whatever this life brings, we stand on what is timeless. We stand on what is true. We stand up unashamed, no matter what the world may do. We stand upon this rock, spoken by the Lord of all. And though other lives built on sand may fall, we stand.
It may not be in fashion, it may not be in vogue, but when we look at empty lives all around, we know we could live pursuing power, thinking pleasure satisfies. God's light cuts through the shadows, revealing there just lies.
We stand on what is timeless. We stand on what is true. We stand up unashamed, no matter what the world may do.
We stand upon this rock, spoken by the Lord of all.
And though other lives built on sand may fall, we stand. Let us trust His every word, resisting every wrong. Let us read it and believe it. It's our only hope for standing strong. We stand on what is timeless. We stand on what is true. We stand up unashamed, no matter what the world may do.
We stand upon this rock, spoken by the Lord of all.
And though other lives built on sand may fall, we stand.
All right, did you get the handouts tonight? We are in the book of Proverbs, and we are going to finish. We've been looking at the critical man, the gossip, and this is part number 4, and we're going to finish it tonight. I've heard a lot of negative comments from people saying that, but I'm just hearing that they're going around saying things, so we're going to finish this tonight, okay? Thanks for catching that, all three of you. Just a reminder, during the summer, we switch series up for a little bit. We are going to do a few more lessons in Proverbs after the summer, but during the summer on Thursday nights, we're actually going to take a look at the Ten Commandments, and they're not what you think. When people think of the Ten Commandments, they think of, you know, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, and we think of loss of freedom, whereas God's laws aren't loss of freedom. Following them actually gives us freedom. And it's a sign of God's love, and I think we don't look at them correctly. So starting next Thursday, we'll look at that through the summer. And then on Sunday nights, we're going to have a series on the family. We're calling it A Family Portrait, What a Christian Family Looks Like. And so, by the way, on Sunday nights, we have family night. So we'll come in. Service starts right at 5 on Sunday night, and I'm gonna get done right at 6 o'clock. Latest I'll go is 5 after, or maybe a couple minutes, but we're looking to get up so we have time outside to fellowship and the children's sports leagues and so forth. And so that is what we're going to be doing there. We've been looking at the critical man. We mentioned that that the word Satan means accuser, the word devil means slanderer, and so whenever we're doing that activity, we're acting like the enemy of our souls, and we don't want to do that. Last time we spoke, last week, we went through 8 through 11. We said the way to end problems and pain is to stop the gossip. We said number 9, a critical person is showing that they will never be a wise person. Number 10, a constantly critical person will eventually be a hated person. And then we mentioned number 11, critics enjoy what they're doing. So we have quite a few to cover tonight, and so let's get going so we can finish up the critic. Number 12, a critical person will be identified and seen as a proud person. A critical person will be identified and seen as a proud person. Look at Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 24. It says, proud and haughty scorner is his name, who dealeth in proud wrath. It's identifying a person who is critical by really what they're doing. That is their name. That is who they are. I take two things from that. I don't know if it's on your paper there. First of all, their name that identifies them. Okay? Their name. They are proud and haughty. A name is that which identifies a person. What if we look on our lives, what do we wish to be identified as? When someone thinks of us, this could be actually scary if you think about it. What's the first thing that comes to their mind? If someone had to name you based on what they thought about you, would they be able to say your name publicly? I guess you could say. You'll catch that by the time you're driving home. Thank you for coming. Yeah, but what identifies us? A person is a scorner. They're proud and haughty. A name's important, by the way. Okay? A name is very important. By the way, a wife, and this may not be very popular, but we'll live. A wife takes her husband's name to identify with him. Okay? They don't keep their last name. I remember years ago, I was teaching Sunday school years ago, and I got up, and I wasn't even teaching on marriage. I thought, you know, listen, the wife takes the husband's last name. I said, you know, after all, in Genesis it says, and God called their name Adam. I got an email the next day from a lady in my class. She signed it with her maiden name. She was kind of upset. Where is that in the Bible? She just asked for the verse. And so I sent her the exact verse. And she emailed me back and said, thank you. It's like, yeah, it's in the Bible. I'm not just making this stuff up, people. Okay? But you know what? I'm glad my wife, most of the time, wants to be identified with me. Okay? And she doesn't throw out her maiden name. But that's your children. Your children carry that family name, right? You ever tell your children, hey, you're a whatever, a Myers or a Fabros or a Snyder or a, we don't have very many Smiths or Johnsons around here, but you know, that's your name. Live up to that name. Well, a name identifies us. In the Bible, a name identified a person for good and bad. How many of you remember Ichabod? Okay, that's a bad name to have. People don't name their children Ichabod. You know what Ichabod means? The glory has departed. What happened? Eli died because they lost a battle. They lost the Ark of the Covenant. So Eli dies. His two sons die. And one of his son's daughters, wives is having a baby. And she died in childbirth. And she has this kid thinking about everybody that's dying and knowing that she's dying. She goes, Ichabod. Wow, that's a bad name, right? So a name identifies. Well, a person who's a critic, the Bible's naming them here. They're proud and haughty scorner. We should strive to have a good name, should we not? Look at the verse there in Proverbs. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. Now, in our society, if someone could get a lot of money, they could care less what people think about them. Some. It's the end game. I got the money. No, what people think about us, not in a proud way or kind of lifting ourselves up type of way, not that kind of way. But what people think about us is important, and we should do our best to be a testimony. So their name identifies them. He says they're proud and haughty scorner. Next, that is the reason they have a bad attitude. He says, who dealeth in proud wrath. See, they're identified as proud and haughty because they are scorners, and then because of that, they're proud, and they get angry. Proud wrath, you know what that means? Well, I have a right to be mad because I'm right. Always angry. And tearing down others, they're lifting themselves up. That is what pride does. We've already talked a little about that. We want to make sure that we're not proud. That's why we say things about others and do things of that nature. God does not want us to be that way. So a critical person's identified and seen as a proud person. Number 13. Now, I'm going to I'm going to, now 13 and 14 go together and they balance each other out, okay? So stay with me on 13 and then we'll understand it together when we get to 14. Number 13, correcting a critic causes problems or can cause problems for your reputation. Correcting a critic creates problems for your reputation, or it can. Proverbs 9:7. He that reproveth a scorner getteth to himself shame, and he that rebuketh a wicked man getteth himself a blot. Look at the words used there. Reproveth. Reproveth means to chasten or discipline someone for the purpose of instructing them and admonishing them to a better action. It's not just getting up, sometimes we do it, just getting in someone's face and just calling them out. Just for the sense of calling them out. There's a purpose. They're trying to call them out to help them to work on what they're doing in their life. It has a purpose for it. The problem is who they're trying to help or who they're trying to reprove. A scorner. Whenever you do that, the Bible says you get to yourself shame or disgrace. And he that rebuketh a wicked man, and of course the scorner would be a wicked individual also, getteth to himself a blot. What is a blot? It just doesn't sound good. A blot. It's like a blemish. It's a defect. And so when we correct someone or try to help someone that has a spirit openly that they don't want to hear it, we can, in a sense, cause trouble for ourselves. Because as we look, they have a tendency to enjoy what they're doing. And as we saw the last point, they also have a tendency to be proud, so you have a trouble. You have trouble with that. They don't want to hear anything. So they react harshly towards them who corrected them, towards the person who corrects them. Okay? Sometimes it's just better. Now you say, well, you always just let a person like that get away with things? I'll explain to you when we don't. Okay, the next point. But some people, the situation doesn't call for you to say anything, and so it's best for you just to leave them alone. If it's not going to help them, it's only going to hurt you. It's like, just don't get involved. Now, there are times we should get involved, but in a lot of cases, if they're acting like that, don't. Now, look at Proverbs 9:8, though. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Okay? He's reinforcing what we just said. But look at the flip side here. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. Somebody who's seeking to do the right thing, if they step out of line and they're doing the wrong thing and someone calls them on it, they appreciate it. Now, it doesn't mean we all have to walk around and be the spiritual police. That's not what I'm talking about, because that won't work. But if you are close with somebody, you know somebody, and they step out of line and you lovingly help them, you lovingly rebuke, hey, you know, that was probably not the best thing. You know what? They'll appreciate it. Okay? They will appreciate the fact that you're trying to help them. That doesn't mean we go around looking. No. But sometimes in the course of life, something happens. But the problem is, you know what? Most people don't like to be told. That's our flesh. Don't raise your hand because you think you're wise. But does anybody enjoy being corrected? Exactly. I just love when someone gets on me and like, I did wrong. I love that. No one likes that. But although we may not like it, sometimes as we look back on it, it's like, you know what? That was good for me. That helped me. And so a wise person, they're looking for help from others, things that'll help them and help them to become a better Christian. But can I just tell you something? A critic doesn't. They're always just trying to hurt others. What is shame? What does a critic do to those who try to help him? Shame. They try to disgrace them. You see, because you said something to them, they're going to try to make you look bad in front of others. Not in front, usually behind your back, right? They're going to go, hey, you know, da, da, da. Why? Because in that, they almost feel a comfort to the fact that they can discount what you said to them. Blot, they try to specifically tear you down. So you might become their target, so be very, very careful. Someone has said, unsought advice is seldom heeded, and often resented. And I have found that to be true. Unless you know somebody close enough, you know they're a wise individual, and you have the relationship enough to say, I'm not trying to get on you, I make mistakes, but have you thought about this? See, wise people want help. By the way, let me say this, and this is personal, you think about it yourself. If you always have everything figured out and you don't want to talk to anybody about it, you're probably going to make a mistake. If you're not willing to see what others think and you're making some big decision, you always have everything figured out. Listen, you don't. I don't see everything. I don't know everything. But neither do you. And so that's why we need others to maybe point some things out we don't see. So never get to the point where you think you have all the answers. Because as I've said, and a lot of times, you don't even know all the questions. Now, unless you're a teenager, you know everything. You're excluded from that, okay? We know you know everything, so that's fine. Okay, so the point is, be careful because you can become their target. Now, number 14. Now, here we go. You say you're contradicting yourself. No, I'm not. I was going to say God said this, but he's not contradicting himself either. I'll explain it. Number 14. You reprove a critic only, or primarily would be a good word, for the sake of others. For the sake of others. Look at Proverbs 19:25. It says, smite a scorner. I like that, actually. You know, how many of you ever, you know what smite means? Hit them upside their head. Okay, that's what you think. All right, let them have it. Now, I don't think, it's not physically go up there and just, whap, you're a scorner. I just thought I'd take it out on you. Let them have it. Why? And the simple will beware. And reprove one that hath understanding, he will understand knowledge. Again, that's going back to the person that wants to hear it. But he says, smite a scorner, and the simple will beware. In this verse, there are three people mentioned. There is the scorner. That's the one who needs to be not corrected. He needs to be dealt with. In the situation I'm going to explain, you're not talking to him to help him. That's why it's okay. We like to unload sometimes in a nice Christian way. That's the time to kind of unload a little bit. Why? Well, you say, but I thought he's going to get on. Well, there's a reason. He needs to be punished. He needs to be basically told in no timid manner that he was wrong. Then you have the simple man in the verse. Smite the scorner and the simple. That's a simple person is someone, they're not the fool who defies God. They're not the wise man who seeks to be more like God. They're the simple, they just don't know any better. They could turn either direction maybe. And so you have the simple man. Then you have the man of understanding. He, in this verse, is in contract to the scorner. When you tell him something, it helps him to understand more, so he learns more and he grows more. Now, what's that all about? The situation is this. The reason we would stand up to a scorner, after the Bible also says don't reprove him, is for the sake of someone else who could be corrupted or influenced by him. You know, if I'm with someone and I felt they were a scorner and we're alone, I just ignore them and basically take off. Just, I have nothing to do with it. But if that's a person that's going to hurt somebody else, that's going to hurt a simple person, or a simple person is around, they're influencing that person, and my silence might validate his garbage. That needs to be dealt with. That's a time when it's like, you know what? We're not going there. Oh, but there's other people around. If he gets upset with me, I will take it for the sake of the other person. Okay, I hope you understand that. We don't just go around ripping people because we feel like it. No, because they're hurting somebody. The scorner's not going to listen. And really, that's not the point. It's not for the scorner we're saying something. We're saying something for the point of the other person that doesn't know any better. Don't let people just get up and say things that are nonsense. Worst case scenario, we step up and say something for the sake of the one who doesn't know any better. And if they may be affected by the critic. What's happening is our society, what we've done even with like punishment, we don't punish anymore. People commit crimes, they get off easy. Say, oh, that's, look, you know, the death penalty. We don't like the death penalty anymore. Unless you kill an animal, then that's wrong. I'm not saying kill animals for the sake of killing animals. We're just so messed up. The kid that fell in there and they had to shoot the gorilla. I'm not for shooting a gorilla in the zoo, but you know what? What took so long? If there's a child down there, it's like, get the gun now. Let's not wait and see how many times he's going to drag the kid around. But human life isn't important anymore. I'm sure people would say something about the alligator that got mistreated after he killed that child. Come on, animals are animals. They're going to hurt but our society, we're messed up. We can't think. But by the way, so the death penalty wouldn't be a deterrent. Yes, it would be. Punishment would be a deterrent, but there is no punishment anymore. In 1963, Bear Bryant was a very famous coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Probably one of the best college coaches of all time. And so he was a man of principle. If you violated a principle, there was punishment for it. And the punishment was for the sake of the team. His star player was Joe Namath. At the end of the 63 season, they were headed to a big-time bowl game. Namath violated a rule. Now, he was one of the top football players. Their best player by far and away, quarterback, the guy, key guy. Big game, their biggest game of the year, a bowl game. That's like the end of the year, the big one. So he had a decision. Am I going to really suspend my best player before the biggest game of the year, our last game? But you guess what? He lived by principle. And he suspended him. It wasn't even a question. He violated the rule. He got suspended. Now, by the way, his team was able to barely win that game, but that was irrelevant. Guess what? The next year, everybody was right in line. Joe Namath stayed right in line. And they went undefeated the next year. But you know what? He had a choice to make. It's like, listen, I have to do this. And if Joe Namath gets mad, there's got to be something set down. That this is unacceptable behavior. So we got to be very, very careful. Contrast that with a guy named Lawrence Phillips. Lawrence Phillips was a football player in Nebraska. Lawrence Phillips was a bad guy. Before their championship game, he scaled a 3-story apartment and beat his girlfriend. His coach, because he wanted to win the game, didn't suspend him. By the way, they won the title. I don't want to use the word stupid because some of you could. The very ignorant sports writers, the headline was, Lawrence Phillips proves his critics wrong. Because he won? By the way, he ended up in jail for many years and ended up recently just dying. It's like, come on. Our times have changed. And because we let things go, we're sending the message, everything's okay. Listen, if someone scored for around a group of people, for their sake, we need to say, you know what, let's not do that. That's not becoming behavior. Number 15. A critic is always right. Doesn't want to hear it. A wise son. Now here's a comparison. Proverbs 13:1. A wise son heareth his father's correction, instruction. He wants to hear it. But a scorner heareth not rebuke. Scorner's like, I don't want to hear it. Instructions teaching what's right. You know why? He always knows what's right. He always knows what's right. Solomon would be connected to two members in his family who showed both sides of that spectrum. The first one would be David, right? David did something wrong. David committed adultery. He didn't kill a man, but he basically worked it out so that her husband got killed, and then he married her. And what happened? Nathan got up in his face. Nathan told him a story about, you know the story. And then David got, how dare he steal their only animal? And David goes, I'm talking about you. You're the man. You know how David reacted? You're right. I've done wrong. He received it. Then you look at Solomon's son, Rehoboam. When the kingdom came to him, and Solomon towards the end of his life went bad and caused a lot of problems, the people came to him and said, hey, your dad was killing us. Let's lighten it up a little bit. We'll serve you. And he got advice from the old wise men that said, if you will just lighten up on these people, they'll serve you forever. And then he listened to his buddies. That was the Bible version of the millennials. They know everything. Okay? Yeah. And they're like, oh, no, man, you got to show them the way it is. You tell them you think my father was tough. I'm going to be way tougher than my father. And he got up and gave the little speech. And 10 of the 12 tribes said, later, we're done. You go over there, we'll get a new king. Okay? So here's one, David, his father, who listened, and his son, who refused to listen. Be careful, we're not always right. We have to be able to take the correction. When we don't, that is nothing more than pride. Proverbs 16:15 said, pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Why is that true? Why does pride come before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall, before we hurt ourselves? Because we don't listen. God sends people our way, or we know that someone tells us, or we hear it, and we know the truth, and we know what the right thing to do is, but we're not going to listen. And so we bypass that instruction, and we go head on into something that's going to hurt us. We need to listen. We don't know everything. If we a lot of things could be avoided if we would just listen, particularly to God and those he sends to help us. A lot of stuff could be avoided, but we know everything. In the early days of the automobile, there was a family that had bought, they had bought an automobile, and most of the automobiles at that time, unfortunately, were Fords. You know, Henry Ford had the assembly line and the Model T's and the Model. So it was all Fords. They had no ops. They had no choice. And unfortunately for them, there was no such thing as AAA. By the way, AAA was founded. I don't know if you knew the history of this. Was founded to help Ford owners. I don't know if you know that. That's just kidding. I'm lying. But anyhow, they bought this new Ford, and cars were a new thing. And so one afternoon, they're going to take a little stroll out in their car. That's just a leisurely ride and get out there. And because it was a Ford, it broke down. You can tell I don't like Fords, right? One of these days, God's going to give me a Ford, and I'm just going to be embarrassed about the whole thing. By the way, if I ever do drive a Ford, I'm going to go through McDonald's drive-thru in it, okay? And buy a fish sandwich. Boy, that would be the three worst things in my life. Driving in a Ford through a McDonald's, eating a fish sandwich. I think life would come to an end. And the world would collapse. But their Ford broke down, and an older gentleman pulled over. And cars were new. It wasn't like, you know, there's a lot of people that know how to work on cars now. It's kind of a newfangled thing. A guy pulled over and said, hey, you want me to look at that and see if I can help you? And these people are saying, you know, they looked at the old man and said, no, what would you know about? What would you know about a car? No, don't worry about it. We'll be all right. And the guy said, okay, have a good day. By the way, that was Henry Ford. They sent Henry Ford packing. And by the way, could you imagine? He's like, they don't want my help. I'm out of here. Let them sit on the side of the road. I think if he invented that thing, he probably knew how it worked. But that's how we are a lot of times. God sends help our way, and it's right there. But because we know everything, we don't listen to anything. And so a critic is like that. That's one of the reasons it's kind of hard to teach them something. But the whole point of all of that is, let's make sure that we are not like that, that we want to learn. We want to hear what God has for us and others as they help us along the path. Number 16. We're doing so good. We're going to finish up. Number 16. A critic only goes to those whom he has no respect for. A critic only goes to those whom he has no respect for. Work with me here. Proverbs 15:12. A scorner loveth not one that reproveth him. Okay? So they don't like someone who's wise enough to help them to grow past what they're doing. Neither will he go unto the wise. So a scorner or a critic, once they understand a person is a wise person, they're not going to go to them, and they're not going to go criticize to them because they understand where that's going to head. So what does that tell you? Who would they then go to? If they're not going to go to the wise, who are they going to go talk to? They're going to criticize someone to you because they don't think you're wise. They think you're on their level until you show them otherwise. So think of it this way, in a sense. If someone comes to you, starts being critical about someone, you know what they're saying? I don't respect you. I don't think you're wise. That might change a lot of conversations, right? There is something in you that says, you're not going to reprove me. You're not. Well, I feel comfortable doing this around you. We don't want to be like that. Then the last thing is this. We have a couple minutes. A scornful person means nothing but pain. A scornful person means nothing but pain. As we have seen throughout the whole, but throughout all the lesson, if you see all the different principles, you understand they mean pain. To two people, they mean pain. First of all, to others. Letter A, I think you have on yours. To others. Scornful men bring a city into a snare, but wise men turn away wrath. The picture here is there's a city that is getting into trouble simply because of the scorners in that city. Their scorning is causing problems for the whole city. Now, conversely, a wise man, they turn away wrath. Some people are just really good at bringing problems. And when you're around somebody that's good at bringing problems, you get caught in the vortex. You're right in on it because you're proximity. But yet, a wise person, they're able to turn that away. A wise person, how do you turn it away? Your tone of voice. Sometimes you get in with someone trying to talk to someone you don't know. If they're raising their voice, sometimes the way to do it is just lower your voice. The soft answer turneth away wrath. But boy, scorner, they stir everything up, and so they don't only cause problems for themselves, they're causing problems for other people. So be very, very careful. As we have seen already in our study, the Bible told us they're mean, they're vicious, they're hurtful, and they'll tear you down. And so be very careful about being involved with anything. If it wasn't other people, then it wouldn't be an issue, but they're hurting others. They're anxious. The best thing is to avoid them. Avoid them. We ought to seek people in our life that when we're around them, they lift us up. When we're around them, we're encouraged. By the way, you know how that is. If you're ever around someone that's just a bit of an encourager, it's like you like being around them. It's like, I don't even know why, but when I'm around this person, I just feel better. You know why? They're an encourager. And there's other people, you could be as happy as can be, and if they walk into the room, they suck the life out of it. It's like, what happened? All of a sudden, I was ready to, you know, have a dance fit here. And now I feel like banging my head against the wall. What happened? The joy sucker came in. Okay? Find the encourager. When you find someone that you're around them, they encourage you in the right way, say, man, that's the kind of person and then let's seek to be that kind of person. So they bring problems to others, and then letter B, they bring problems to themselves. Look what it says, Proverbs 19:29. Judgments are prepared for scorners and stripes for the back of fools. Now, I don't know much, but that doesn't sound fun. That sounds like hurt. If you want to be that kind of person, be prepared for a life of pain. You're going from problem to problem to problem. And the problem with most people is they want help for their problems. They don't want help for what is causing their problems. Right? People call, I have this problem in my life and I want help. It's like, okay, that's the problem, but there's something in your life that's causing that problem. So let's not just deal with the problem. Let's deal with what's causing that problem. You know, say a husband and wife, they're fighting and one of them takes off. It's like, we want to get back together. Please get them back in the house. Okay, that's fine. You want to get them back in the house. But if you don't fix what caused the problem in the first place, it's going to happen again. Yep. Deal with the root. That's what a scorner. They don't want to deal with the root. And it's just pain after pain after pain. You say, man, it just seems like my life is just a series of problems. Ask yourself this question. Are they self-inflicted? If it's self-inflicted, or am I allowing myself proximity with others who are bringing this upon me? A scorner doesn't get that. And so they live a life of misery. As Christians, we don't have to be that way. As we said very early on, a good verse in Proverbs, the power of life and death is in the tongue. It's a matter of how you use it. Think of a knife. How do you use it? A surgeon uses a knife to help people, to get rid of that which is wrong. A murderer uses a knife to kill you. Same knife. It's how you use it. How do you use your words? Do your words blow people up, or do your words help people out? Let's seek to be encouragers. Let's pray.